Welcome to Friend of Maryland. My name is Kat Pause, and this is a fat-friendly space. Today on Friend of Maryland, I consider untruths and omissions that are common in news media stories around fatness. I chat with Substantia Jones about the Adipositivity Project, and I spotlight a blog from the Fat Nutritionist about dealing with the holidays. Working as a fat activist means you are often the sole voice in a space suggesting that being fat is not the worst thing in the world. You're criticized regularly for your insistence that the relationship between weight and health is more complex than most people understand. You are patronized when you suggest that fat people are the best individuals to share what a lived fat experience is like, rather than, say, a thin person wearing a fat suit. And you deal daily with concerned trolls. People who say, well, of course people shouldn't be discriminated against based on their body size, but... dot, dot, dot. Go ahead and fill in your favorite concerned troll justification here. It doesn't help matters that the media, including the news media, whose job it is to inform, engage in untruths and omissions around fatness. Putting aside the other egregious errors they make when reporting on issues of body size, like always using headless fatties and only presenting one side of the story, the biggest disservices they do are in the untruths and omissions present in most pieces about body size. For example, in most stories about obesity, weight, fatness, what have you, in New Zealand, it is reported that New Zealand is the third fattest country in the world, behind the United States of America and Australia. This is not true. According to data on obesity from the World Health Organization, New Zealand doesn't even make the top 20, and this is of the 193 countries with reported data. New Zealand does happen to be the third fattest country in the OECD, a consortium of 30 economically developed countries. And while some may matter that those countries are the only countries that matter, it doesn't change the fact that it is untrue when a news outlet reports that New Zealand is the third fattest country in the world. When the Fat Studies Reflective Intersection Conference was featured on the cover of the Dominion Post in July, the story contained the incorrect statement that New Zealand is the third fattest in the world. When I followed up with the reporter, I was told that they had pulled the evidence for the statement from a previous story published in the paper, but that they took my point. So because an earlier piece in the Dom Post had claimed New Zealand to be the third fattest in the world, then that was enough evidence for them to claim it again. I never did see a correction run on the error, and the Dominion Post continues to embrace this untruth. A colleague of mine recently expressed his own dismay over this phenomenon. Andrew had recently been interviewed for a story about the size of airplane seats and had corrected the reporter when he, Matt Stewart of the Dominion Post, incorrectly stated that New Zealand was the third fattest country in the world. Even after he was corrected, the piece ran with the false information. Andrew ended up sending him a follow-up email, which he shared in his blog piece, More Media Porkies. But as you can see, if you go look at the piece today, it hasn't been updated to reflect the false statement or correct it. And so the cycle continues. Perhaps the most damage done by the news media on this topic is their refusal to accurately present the evidence on weight loss or engage with the evidence at all. Empirical data has shown weight loss attempts, whether through diet, exercise, lifestyle changes, etc., fail in 95% of individuals. Almost all individuals who attempt to lose weight are unable to maintain a meaningful, meaning more than 10 kilos, and permanent, longer than 5 years, reduction in weight. And yet this is rarely included in any story that you see about obesity, fatness, dieting, New Year's resolutions, what have you. When was the last time you read a piece where weight loss was part of the story and the 5% success rate was included? This glaring omission reinforces the belief that fat people could stop being fat if they simply tried hard enough. It reinforces the indignation of those with anti-fat attitudes and the shame of those who have failed in their efforts to reduce their body size. Now, I'm not suggesting that the news media are solely responsible for the hysteria that surrounds the obesity rhetoric in our world. And I'm not suggesting that it's the news media's responsibility to educate people on the complex nature between weight and health, on the relationship between our bodies and our lived experiences, or on the problematic nature of suggesting that people have a moral obligation to be healthy. I am suggesting that the standard for evidence be more than whether it has been published or used before by the same media. I am suggesting that the news media has an obligation to recognize their own bias and fat hatred and how this shapes the pieces they produce. And I'm suggesting that they have an obligation to do more than simply reinforce the status quo without asking critical questions or allowing for multiple perspectives to be included. We could move the conversation around fatness and body size leaps and bounds if the news media would stop with the untruths and omissions. Joining me today is Substantia Jones from the Adipositivity Project. Substantia, thank you so much for coming on Friend of Marilyn.
Thank you for having me, Kat.
So I have to admit, I'm a huge fan, and I will say that the only thing that exists on my bucket list now that I've seen Madonna in concert is to pose for you at some point. But for people who don't actually know what the Adiposity Project is, how would you explain it to them?
Adipositivity Project, actually. Adiposity is something a bit different, but adipositivity is having to do with fat, but putting a positive spin on it. It started with my just generally observing that in a relationship that I was in, actually, with a gentleman who did not have a preference for big women. Yet over the few years that we were together, both of us noticed that he started looking more and more at big women as a result of, I assumed, just kind of the constant bombardment of my body on his eyes. And I started noticing it in myself as well. This was when Mode magazine was out, and I viewed these as positive representations of big women kind of doing something to us. And I thought, that's interesting. This is kind of a means of social engineering, just kind of bombard the world with positive representations visually of fat people and see what happens. My original purpose was more mainstream, was to sort of change the minds of civilians, when in fact it soon became apparent that the minds that most needed changing were the fat people themselves.
And so what you do is you take pictures, you take photographs.
I do. People contact me and tell me they want to be adiposers, and we get together, and I have them generally drop trowel for me or get as naked as they're comfortable getting. And I take photographs of them and put them on the internet for everyone to see.
Do you have a lot of people who are interested in being adiposers?
I do. It's always been a little bit more than I can keep up with. And then recently it's been a lot more than I can keep up with.
Because this is a passion. This is a hobby of yours. This isn't something that you do kind of full time supporting yourself, correct?
No, there's no money.
Yeah.
This costs money. It doesn't.
Oh, no.
It doesn't make any money, and people don't understand that to a degree that I'm starting to not understand it myself. But this someone who recently who has no connection and recently was learning about the Adipositivity Project, they said, "You've had 6.5 million hits and you don't have advertising on your site?" I said, no. And they said, "Why?" And I opened my mouth for words to come out.
And they just didn't.
I couldn't think of the words. Wow, I think I have forgotten why. It would be nice to monetize it in some way that's acceptable to everyone at some point in the future. Maybe not advertising, but certainly soon I hope to be making prints available for people.
Oh, to purchase.
And that might help fund the project a bit.
Well, I have a lot of blank walls at my house.
Excellent.
So
We love blank walls.
Well, I have to say, so I mean, one thing that actually I do have hanging on my walls, I buy your calendar every year.
Oh, thank you.
Such a fantastic calendar. And in fact, I buy one for myself. I buy one for my mom. I buy one for one of my best friends. And then I usually buy like a few extras for people I meet during the year that I think might benefit.
Well, bless your heart.
Well, because I think, I mean, because you mentioned about why you started the Adipositivity Project in the first place. I think that there's so much to be said for just simply making things visible is partly how we go to making things normal.
Exactly.
Or to seem not unnormal or not deviant. And I think that, at least I know for me, the first year that I had your calendar, which was a few years ago, and I had it like in my closet in my bedroom. And I was almost embarrassed looking at it every day when I would look at it, partly because of the nudity at that time. I was like, oh, you know, naked women. But also just partly because I myself, even as a fat person and as a kind of beginning or emerging fat activist at that time, wasn't really comfortable with pictures of fat bodies, with actually seeing that. And of course, now it's my calendar this year. When you walk in my house, it's the first thing you see. It's right at the front door.
I like that.
You know, so anyone that comes over to my house, the first thing they see is a naked fat person.
Hello. I like that. I like the progression. That's kind of the way it's supposed to happen.
Yeah.
You clutch your pearls at first because it's something very new and unusual, and something we're certainly not accustomed to seeing. Then you gradually get used to it, and I would hope that it has at least in some small way changed the way you feel about fat bodies.
Oh, for me, it's absolutely played a role because now I find fat bodies beautiful. I think they're awesome. And I think that I've kind of also been able to witness that same large transformation in my mom and in some of my friends who I give it to, in the sense of not that they've necessarily come to embrace fat as beautiful as I have, but they see it as less ugly, or they see it as, you know, less awkward.
It's a process. And just because it's slower for some people doesn't mean that they're not going to get there. I think that's great. Thank you for the outreach, Kat.
Yeah. It's the least I can do. You're doing all the work.
We do appreciate it.
So do you have women that have posed for you more than once? Are there kind of frequent people that come back?
Oh, yeah. I have a bunch of repeat offenders. fewer and fewer because I'm really kept busy with new folks.
Mm.
But yes, we have... We have a number that have done it more than once. And there are people that I can sort of rely on, local people. If I say, hey, I have access to a great spot and I only have 30 minutes, can you meet me at this, you know, spot at this time?
Mm.
And they'll be there, and that's nice.
So are you ever on the other side of the camera?
I have been, yes. I am occasionally. Haven't been in a while. But there are some images in the hopper ready to go that are up.
Okay.
So you'll see me again.
That's very exciting. So if someone who's listening who has never really been exposed to the Adipositivity Project and is like, oh, this sounds interesting, I want to kind of check it out, how would you recommend they kind of dip their toes in?
Don't do it with the boss looking over your shoulder.
Right, not safe for work, right?
Just in case. I tell people it's not safe for work unless you work at Naked Fat Lady Land.
Right. But you do have a website.
Yes, adipositivity.com.
Excellent.
And there are over 500 nakedish fat ladies there now. So there's plenty to see. And just, you know, literally dip your toe in. Just go slow. There are people who tell me that they spent a weekend going through all the photos.
Oh, wow.
Some do it in an evening. Some are doing it, you know, just a few at a time. Some people have been with us since the beginning, and they just watch them as they come up. About once a week, a new one appears on the site.
And if they're interested in getting the calendar, how can they get one of those?
There is a link on the website that says shop.
Mm.
And it will change soon because, oddly enough, the calendar, the people who handle that have rejected it. They have deleted.
Oh, no.
So by next calendar season, we will have another way for you to get calendars.
Okay.
We will have calendars.
And so what if there are individuals out there who would actually be interested in posing for you? Can people just contact you about that?
Absolutely. There is a contact link right there where it says shop. There's a link that says contact. And just drop me an email, and it's helpful if you put the word shoot in the subject line, and then maybe wait a bit with some patience, and you might have to try me again. I'm really bad at correspondence, but know that I do eventually get to everyone. I'm slow about it because I'm sort of overwhelmed at all times.
Well, I'm glad that you came on the show to share this with us, and I promise that the next time, or, you know, when I'm going to be where you are the next time, I will let you know because I want you to shoot me.
That would be great. And if anyone out there would like to bring me to New Zealand.
Oh, even better.
I'll happily get on a plane for you. All the men there look like Jemaine Clement, right?
Oh, well, that and Brett McKenzie, yeah.
Okay, yeah. Just checking.
All right, Substantia. Well, thank you so much. And I look forward to chatting with you again.
It's been a pleasure.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
In the spotlight today is a piece from The Fat Nutritionist. The piece is entitled The Inevitable Holiday Post and was published on November 20th, 2012. Quote, "It's true. Thanksgiving is a weirdly imperialistic, semi-genocidal sort of holiday, but hey, at least we can enjoy the tradition of getting together with family and eating a bunch of mashed potatoes. Or can we? If some people's relatives had their way, the answer would be a resounding, ha-ha, sucker! Because certain people exist only to make your food-eating life as a fat person, or a whatever-sized person, miserable. So here's the thing. Whether or not you're fat, you are the only person who gets to decide what food goes in your mouth, what tastes good, and how much of it makes you feel full and satisfied. No matter how many busybodies and dietary conspiracy theorists get in your face, you are still the only one who can decide. This goes for holidays just as much as any other time of year, and maybe especially for holidays, given that they have been specifically set aside for centuries as feast days. A time to get your feast on, a time to enjoy food without the usual constraints of looming scarcity, whether naturally or artificially imposed. So with that in mind, I have a few holiday tips for you, and they are not of the fill up on celery before the party variety. Holiday tip number one, you have permission to eat, period. You have permission to eat what and how much you want. Food is not poison, your body belongs to you, and you are a grown-up who gets to decide what to eat. That's it, that's all, it's the plain truth. So give yourself explicit permission to eat when you sit down to eat. Remind yourself who is really in charge, and it's you, by the way. Tip number two, it's your job to take care of your body. And when I say take care of it, that's not code for eat some ridiculously restrictive diet predicated on the notion that food is poisonous. It means to take care of yourself in a way that feels good and allows you to function well, both physically and emotionally. Tip number three, eat foods that are enjoyable, but that also make you feel good. Tip four, don't eat stuff you don't like, either before the holiday meal or at the holiday meal. Tip number five, don't engage with the invisible weight talk or talk of food-related sinning. I'm so bad. This is so bad for me. Watch me eat the entire thing because I'm in total denial about my own neuroses. Just don't engage. It's not your job to educate people about eating or self-acceptance or health at every size, although a light assurance that food is good and it's a holiday, so lighten up, may not go amiss. Tip number six, one simple phrase, let's just enjoy this, can work wonders. Tip number seven, in case you were tempted, lay off other people's eatings. Put down that responsibility today. Don't push food on people. Don't comment on how much or how little they take. Don't ask them, should you be eating that, or how's your blood pressure? It's not your or anyone else's place to police what other people eat. They're grown-ups. Tip number 8, if the food police descend on you, hear them out, then drop it. Tip number 9, focus on your own food and enjoy it. Eyes on your own plate, if you will. Tip number 10, if all else fails, go sit at the kiddie table. Sure, they don't want their food touching other food and will often end up with peas in their nose, but otherwise they tend to be pretty chill about letting people eat what they eat. Dig in. Be thankful for your food. That's what this is all about, right? End quote. Thanks for listening to another episode of Friend of Maryland. Friend of Maryland is brought to you by Access Manawatu 999 AM. If you'd like to contact the show with questions, comments, concerns, or suggestions for topics or guests, please email us, friendofmaryland@aol.com. You can also find Friend of Maryland on Twitter and Tumblr. Closing the show is Adele with Love Song.
Whenever I'm alone with you, you make me feel like I